I remember that visit to the doctor when Bobby was almost two. I remember my son Bobby in my husband's arms. Bobby with his head flopped back and his mouth drooling. Bobby, his arms and legs twitching without meaning, like some big fish flopping around out of water. I remember the doctor across his desk trying not to look at us. My husband trying to hold Bobby. And somewhere that auto horn that had got stuck, filling the room with thin, painful sounds. Well, doctor?
No hope. Somewhere in his brain there's an injury. He'll never be able to take care of himself. It's a shame.
Hold still, Bobby. Doctor, what do we do for him?
Doctor, where do we go for treatment?
Listen, you're both young. You'll have more children.
Where do we go for treatment, doctor?
I don't know of any treatment.
There has to be a treatment. There has to be somebody, a doctor, a hospital, somebody who knows what to do for him.
Forget this child. Put him in an institution for the feeble-minded.
Living 1949. Brought to you each week by NBC and its affiliated stations. Today takes pleasure in thanking one of those stations for the moving drama you are about to hear. When first presented by WNBC New York in cooperation with the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies of New York, this story drew high praise for its imaginative, hard-hitting effectiveness in bringing the humane light of hope into the lives of America's most neglected children. We welcome this opportunity to extend its message coast to coast as we bring you the drama document,
With Trembling Hands.
Sometimes sunlight is hard. Sometimes sunlight is terrible and sword-like and stabs you. We walked in the bright sunlight down the street away from the doctor's office. Martin, Bobby, and I. I looked at Bobby's head, lolling back as if its neck were broken, the muscles of his neck straining and failing. Put him in an institution for the feeble-minded. I had a sense of strange people looking at us, recoiling from the lunatic twitching of Bobby's hands. Put him in an institution for the feeble-minded, and the bright sunlight revealed us to each other without pity. Martin, wipe his mouth.
Hold still, Bobby, will you? Maybe we ought to catch a cab.
Watch how you're holding him.
I'm holding him all right. You never see a cab when you want one.
We'll take a bus.
I don't want to take the bus. I want to get home.
Where can you go? Who knows how to help you?
Taxi! I guess he was taken.
Martin, maybe there's a clinic.
Taxi! Taxi! Bobby's getting heavy.
I'll carry him if he's too heavy for you.
I didn't say that.
Oh, Martin, don't hate him. Please don't hate him.
What are you talking about? What the devil is a taxi?
I'll ride in a bus with him if you're ashamed
Look,
to.
Look, why don't you stop mind reading? I told you I want a taxi because I want to get home.
Give him to me, will you? Give him to me. I'll hold
him.
Will
you stop being unreasonable? Now, don't you dare make a scene out here on the street.
I won't let you put him in an institution. I won't let you.
I'm not going to. I'm not going to. Now, are you satisfied? I'm not going to. Taxi! Taxi!
So many things I know now. As I stand here watching my 7-year-old son sleeping quietly, I know what cerebral palsy is now. I know now that when a part of the brain is damaged, as it is in cerebral palsy, sometimes other parts of the brain can be trained to take over the work of the injured parts. But all Martin and I knew in the beginning was that we had a 2-year-old son who couldn't sit up or walk or talk or even reach out and pick up a toy.
I wanted a kid grow up playing ball and running around, laughing.
Don't, Martin.
Well, look at him. What kind of a life is that for a kid? How many doctors has he been to?
Wipe his mouth, Helen.
Hand me the gauze.
Yeah.
Thank you. Come on, Bobby. That's a good boy. Try to hold your head up.
Oh, it's no use, Helen. It's no use. He doesn't understand.
No. No, sometimes I think he does.
All right. I won't fight with you. There's nothing I can do, nothing anybody can do.
Martin, stop hurting yourself.
You're the one that's hurting yourself. You'll drive yourself crazy taking him to doctors for what?
Where are you going?
Out. Maybe I'll take in a picture.
All right, Martin.
I can't take it anymore, Helen. I can't take it anymore.
There are as many people in this country who have cerebral palsy as there are with infantile paralysis. But if Bobby had polio or tuberculosis or heart disease, there would be any number of clinics to treat him. Trying to find help for cerebral palsy is like wandering through a maze in a nightmare, looking for a face or a voice or a hand to point the right direction. It's so hard to find the right avenue, but I heard about a doctor who specialized in cerebral palsy, and I went to see him, too. Well, doctor, is there any hope for him?
Maybe.
Oh, thank God.
I said maybe.
That's more hope than we've ever had before.
I know. We're just beginning to learn what to do for children like your son. There's no cure. Treatment and training, that's all. It costs a lot of money. Might take 5 to 10 years.
And after that?
You can't tell in the beginning. Sometimes, very rarely, in the end, only the doctor and the patient know that the palsy still exists. Sometimes, absolutely no results.
Oh.
A lot depends on the parents.
I'll do anything.
How does your husband feel?
I think he'd feel different if there was some hope.
Ask him to come see me.
Thank you. Bobby!
Here, here. That's no way to carry on. Your boy has to learn to relax. What kind of example do you think you're setting him?
I'm sorry.
That's right. Smile. Tomorrow, you see if you can get your husband to drop in here.
Oh, wait a minute, doctor. I just want to be sure I heard you right. You said he could learn to talk.
Probably.
Walk, too, eat, dress himself?
Why not? It's possible.
Well, they said to put him in an institution for the feeble-minded.
We learn things every day. We know more now.
Is he feeble-minded?
We'll have to test him. There's special tests for handicapped children, you know.
Doctor, I don't want to get my hopes raised for nothing. I tell you, this is my kid. I've lived with him. It hurts me to say this, but I don't think he's normal.
Did you know that 3 out of 4 children with cerebral palsy have a normal intelligence?
No.
Sometimes better.
Well, how do you...
What if he'd been hit by a car and totally paralyzed as a result? Would you say he was feeble-minded then?
Well, that's not the same thing.
He still wouldn't be able to eat by himself or walk or move his hands.
Oh, but you walk down the street and everybody turns away. You're carrying the kid and suddenly you feel ashamed. You can read it in everybody's face. This child of yours is a monstrosity.
The world is full of ignorance. You don't have to accept it.
Well, how do you know what's right? I never stood in the boy's way. She wanted to take him to a doctor. I said, all right. She's had him to 100 doctors.
No one is accusing you. I'm just trying to explain how it is. A normal boy locked away in a prison with walls of paralysis. Trying to reach out somehow. Trying to reach you. Make you know he's human. Make you know he needs help.
Well, I'm not a monster. If I thought the boy had a chance, I'd knock down walls if they stood in his way. It's hard to turn your thinking around.
Of course.
Helen loves him. Maybe too much, I don't know. She's put in so much time with him, there's nothing left for me. We hardly have a chance to talk to each other anymore. She's so busy with him all the time.
Suppose you were normal in every way except one. Every time you wanted to do something, your muscles tied up in knots. Your hands began to tremble. You just had to sit there helpless. Suppose that...
Yeah, I go crazy. I guess I'd give up.
I'll tell you what your son has to go through now. 2 years to learn to move his tongue and move his lips so he can talk. Maybe 5 years. 2 years, 3 years perhaps before he can learn to pick up a cereal spoon and move it to a bowl, then move the spoon back to his mouth so he can eat. Every second of that time will be struggle and frustration. And then to learn to walk.
Walk? How can he learn to do it? Can he?
Unless you kill his will to try.
Me?
You. Make him feel useless. Make him feel, what's the use? Nobody cares. Nobody loves an awkward, useless, ugly thing like me. Child can feel like that. You know, you have the easy part, Mr. Bard. All you have to do is love the boy. The rest he has to do by himself.
You make me feel like a heel.
I meant to. Your attitude was unhealthy.
There's a simple test designed for normal children, which tells whether they're ready to learn to read. The psychologist at the university gave the test to Bobby.
Can you understand me, Bobby? All right, then, Bobby. Now, here on this piece of cardboard, there are 5 marks. I just want you to tell me which 2 marks are the same. Which ones look like each other? All right, Bobby. You just relax now. Now, you don't have to talk to me. You just look at the first one and then the other. Just look at them and I'll understand. All right. Fine.
I looked down the row of marks, following Bobby's eyes. There was a circle, a cross, a diamond, another circle, and a square. Bobby looked at the first circle, and then his eyes moved to the cross and the diamond, and then stopped, fixed on the second circle. I could sense the strain. His hands were fluttering wildly, twitching and jerking. His head jerked back. But he held his eyes on that second circle like grim death. And then the second card, NXQPN. And Bobby's eyes held on the second N. I couldn't stand it anymore. I ran out. When the psychologist had finished and she came out of the testing room, she smiled at me.
Don't worry, Mrs. Bard. He's a very bright boy.
He's a very bright boy. Put him in an institution for the feeble-minded. I didn't know whether to laugh at the irony of it or cry at the pity of it.
All right, Bobby. Say boy. Come on, Bobby. Try. You can do it. Here. Let me put my hand on your diaphragm like this. Now, when I press it, you say it. Boy. Oh, Bobby, that's fine. Now, let's try again. Once more. No, not like that, Bobby. Let's just relax. There. Now, we'll try it again. Boy.
Boy.
Oh, Bobby, that's just fine. Once more, let's do
it. If an ordinary child were brought up on a desert island alone,
good, Bobby, good.
Never seeing now another human being, he would begin to talk sooner or later.
Put my hand on your diaphragm.
He might imitate birds or animals, but he would talk without teaching in a language he made up himself.
Relax a little bit and say it again.
Not Bobby.
Back.
Not any of the cerebral palsy children who have speech handicaps. I finally found a speech clinic which would take Bobby for lessons
once
twice
more.
A week.
Back.
And I carried him back and forth because we couldn't afford a taxi
good,
every day.
Bobby,
he never complained.
Now we'll go back to the
He'd just course. Try a little harder to help me help him dress on clinic days.
Boy.
Boy. Boy. Boy.
Bobby had to wear braces to keep his knees from buckling. Reaching was an effort. Grasping was a torture of indecisive muscles. Holding his head erect was painfully difficult. But he did it, cheerfully. And one of the first things he learned to do was smile. And that's why it made me so angry when relatives and neighbors would look at him in that queer way or make remarks. At first, to protect him, I kept him hidden in his own room when there were people around. Until one day he asked me...
Mother, Am I bad?
Oh, no, Bobby. No, why?
Don't people like to see me?
Well, I just thought you... I'm sorry, Bobby. It won't happen anymore.
You can't do that to the boy. You can't expose him to a bunch of gaping fools.
Martin, I think the sooner people get used to seeing him, the sooner they'll come to understand.
I'm not going to let him be hurt anymore. That's the end of it.
You got hurt when you were a
kid.
Well,
that's different.
That's the same. Oh, Martin, how do you ever expect him to have any confidence in himself when we haven't? Let's get the stroller and take him out for a walk. We walked down the street. And Martin and I knew the faces that wanted to turn around and look at us, but didn't turn around and look at us. And we knew the ones who stared out of the corners of their eyes. We heard the subdued whispers as they made comment. We knew and heard, and we saw and we winced for Bobby, but he didn't seem to notice. And then the little two-year-old from the other end of the block came over to the carriage in the friendly way that small children have. He smiled at Bobby and said, "Hello." And Martin and I relaxed because we thought it was going to be fine. We hadn't noticed the two-year-old's mother standing on her porch.
Dickie, come over here to Mother. Dickie, come here!
I almost wanted to tell Dickie's mother that my son didn't have a disease Dickie could catch. He has an injury. Bobby's hands began to jerk even more violently. And then Martin went around to the front of the carriage and he squatted beside Bobby. And he put his hands on Bobby's arms and he winked. And Bobby knew. Bobby knew that it was all right and he smiled a little shyly. And Martin came around again beside me and pushed the carriage with his head up proudly. And I linked my arm through his as our family took a little walk. Bobby was 5 and a half when he went to camp. A camp for handicapped children. Some with cerebral palsy, some injured in accidents, some victims of polio or bone tuberculosis. He could just barely walk now. And with a lot of trying and a special bent handle on his spoon, he could eat by himself. I'll never forget what it was like for Martin and me when we visited the camp and saw Bobby among other children.
Mother?
Huh?
Dad?
Hmm?
You ought to see me play.
Now, darling, don't get excited. Relax. Talk slowly.
Me and you make our own bed.
Oh, Bobby.
Play ball. And next year, I'm going to race. We race walking.
Oh, Bobby.
Mother, Dad, there's one boy here who can't move at all. He's paralyzed. Mother, I'm so lucky.
He learned a lot at camp. But he came home frustrated, too. Some of the children had been to school and Bobby wanted to go. And so he stood at the window each morning and watched when the bus came to take the other children off for the day. All right, come on, Bobby. Come away from the window. There's no sense mooning.
I'm just watching.
Someday, Bobby, you'll go to school, too. You'll see.
You bet I will.
Would you like to come to the kitchen and talk to me while I get the roast on?
I'll come in and keep you company later, Mother.
Sure. We be all right?
Fine.
In all this great country, only a handful of states and communities have any facilities at all for teaching palsy children. Bobby was almost 7 before he got to go to school, and he was lucky, because Bobby was chosen for a demonstration project. One of 25 children chosen out of more than 400. Lucky children, because they have a chance to become independent. As long as I live, I'll never forget the first time I walked into that school. It was during an assembly period, and the children were singing a song they'd made up by themselves. We've been working in the physio to learn to help ourselves. We've been working in the physio room, and this is what we do. First, we learn to keep our balance. Then we learn to stand. Then we learn to do our walking without a helping hand. Nobody knows how many victims of cerebral palsy are living in America. 300,000 at least. Through birth injury, through sickness, through accident. Some of the cerebral palsy victims are grown men and women now. And some have managed against great odds to become doctors and lawyers, carpenters and watchmakers. And there are some who can never help themselves. They're not all very bright. But 3 out of 4 have normal intelligences. And they can help themselves. They don't have to be discarded on a human junk heap. That day I stood listening to the singing, I kept thinking of the shock and misery of that other day when I was told to put Bobby into an institution. I thought of carrying him in my arms from doctor to doctor looking for help. I thought of the months and years of Bobby learning how to speak. And I thought of the fact that this demonstration class of which Bobby is a part can only handle children between the ages of 4 and 9 years old. I thought, in less than 2 years, Bobby will be 9. And then what? When they sing, "Get up and do it yourself," each child tries to stand up. Each child grabs a chair or a table or the hands of one of the teachers, and they pull themselves up onto their feet. And Bobby stands with the others.
Drama Document with Trembling Hands was first presented by WNBC, NBC's key station in New York, in cooperation with the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies of New York. You have heard about cerebral palsy and of the remedial work which can be done for those who have been called America's most neglected children. You can help by supporting your local and national groups in this fight. And beginning March 17th, continuing through Easter Sunday, the National Society for Crippled Children and Adults will conduct its 16th annual nationwide sale of Easter seals. This annual campaign enlists your support on behalf of crippled children and adults, regardless of age, creed, or race, who are being aided by clinics, treatment centers, vocational training, and other remedial services. Every Easter seal you buy helps a crippled child. Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. The part of Helen was played by Amzie Strickland. Today's script was written by Howard Rodman. Music is composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield, program direction by Jack Cuney. We invite you to listen next week to Second Class Citizen, Robert Warren speaking.
Sunday night would be a very good night for Morgan on NBC.